Although there is a lot of background that unfortunately you have to kind of sit through a little bit to I can get to the meat of everything. So I'll go quickly through those, but there's some interesting points that you kind of have to know before I can get into the analysis. There were a lot of people who have worked on the project or the analysis with me, so they're all listed there. It was quite a team effort to get this far. Okay. And the disclaimer. Okay, so what is implementation fidelity? One of the issues with implementation fidelity is that there tend to be a lot of definitions about it. There's not really one definition going forward. There's what we've been able to do is find different components of what we mean by fidelity. These include adherence, exposure, quality of delivery, participant responsiveness, and program differentiation. What you find in various studies is that people basically use these different definitions. They're kind of defining it for themselves. What you see most often is really the adherence and exposure are the two elements of implementation fidelity that most people are really talking about when they talk fidelity. Why measure implementation fidelity? Typically, we're doing this to interpret outcomes. If a program works or doesn't work, we want to know why. We want to know, was it implemented the way it was intended? If it wasn't implemented the way it was intended, then you really can't make any sense out of your outcomes. You can't really say the program didn't work if nobody did it the right way. The other issue is to assess the feasibility of implementation. It's one thing to say a program works, but when you get into the real world, can people really implement it the way that it was intended? That was really important in ours because the program we were looking at was the RTR program, which is a 16-session curriculum. So there's a lot there, and really you want to get out into the world and see can educators really do this and really do it the way that it was intended to do. Also, you can look at which components of your program are related to which outcomes. But in our situation, we were evaluating a training program. And so for us, in most situations, implementation fidelity is your process outcome. It's messy, as I'm going to talk about, and you can deal with a little bit of messiness when it's a process measure. In our case, it was our outcome measure. And so we really needed to try to work to see that we had some accurate measures, which is really very difficult to do for many reasons. So I'll get into our project. It was the RTR Works project. We were an NIH-funded SBIR. We developed an online training to improve teacher fidelity when implementing the Reducing the Risk curriculum, which is an adolescent reproductive health program. Our particular focus was on the role play. So we decided that we were going to really focus on implementation fidelity to the role play situations in the curriculum because we felt that this was the most difficult piece of the curriculum for most educators to do accurately. This included role play management, engagement. We looked at also being able to answer sensitive questions and then inclusion of LGBTQ students. It was a randomized controlled trial. We had national volunteer sample of 8th to 12th grade teachers who were implementing or said that they wanted to implement RTR. We ended up in the end in 44 states. We had 221 teachers enrolled, and 164 of those teachers actually did post-survey. So because teacher was our unit of analysis, we actually had to recruit quite a bit of teachers, which was another story in and of itself. Our control group used only the RTR curriculum guide, and the treatment group had access to the curriculum guide in addition to the RTR Works online training, and the training was an interactive, self-directed, and it was accessed throughout implementation. So once they had access to it, they could continue to access it. So what do we know about measuring implementation fidelity? It's difficult to get teachers to complete fidelity logs, period. Teachers tend to inflate for many reasons. They tend to inflate their fidelity. And observation pretty much has been considered the gold standard, but it's resource intensive, and particularly in a national study. If you're doing relying on observations for your measure of implementation fidelity, it's quite resource intensive. So we had a lot of data in this project, and I'll step back for a second. The main purpose of the project was to determine the impact of the program. this was something that I was kind of able to throw in by getting multiple data sources so that I could do sort of a secondary look at the implementation fidelity, the quality of the measures, and what we can do to improve the measures. So the focus of this wasn't set up so that we could do the study that I'm talking about, but I was able to get a little bit of data in there so that we could begin to step back and look at it. So it's by no means perfect. It's not the way I would set it up if this was my goal. We had an online pre-survey and an online post-survey. The three that are asterisks are the three that I'm going to really be focusing on today, and they were really the ones that we looked at most often or most exclusively to look at the fidelity. So we had the online implementation logs. There are 16 classes, as I said, so they had logs for every class. We did in-person observations. We picked four key classes to do in-person observations. And audio recordings. We asked all teachers to audio tape these four key lessons. We also did some interviews. Some of them were right after sessions, and some of them were at the end of the program. Our primary items. So what we did is we basically took the activities. We were looking at, I'd say we didn't look at the activities at a really micro level. We looked at the more macro level, and we listed out all of the sort of big clumps of activities in each of the lessons. And you can see we were actually fairly detailed. So we made sure in our clumps that we did list all of those little micro activities, but we didn't have teachers to reduce burden. We didn't have teachers check off every single little activity that they did through the session. We asked them whether they implemented it completely, implemented it partially, or with changes, or did not implement it. For the four key lessons that we looked at where role play was really sort of center, we actually also asked them to provide comments on what they did, if they did change or they did it partially, they provided comments there. Again, to reduce burden, we didn't ask for comments on all 16 of the logs. Our in-person observations, they focused on the four key classes, and if you're familiar at all with RTR, they were classes 4, 5, 10, and 11. We planned 24 unique observations, meaning that we wanted to look at 24 unique educators. We wanted to have three treatment and three control for each of the four key classes. We used four observers who were very familiar with the RTR curriculum, and two of them were actual training developers. It was voluntary on the part of the educators, and they got a $25 incentive. Audio observations, we gave each educator small digital recorders. They had straps to hang around their neck. They had detailed instructions on how they could use how to use the audio tapes. The incentive was $25 each for four of key classes. So if they taped all four classes, they got $100. And there were reminders on the class log that was immediately before this to do their audio tape. Data completion. So 171 of the 221 enrolled completed a class log 1. 162 completed class log 16. And there was an average of about 5 days after implementation for completing logs. We did 25 observations. These were not unique, though. So because of scheduling issues, which I'll talk a little bit later, it was difficult to really get all of these observations in. So what happened often is that with block scheduling, some educators were actually doing like lessons 4 and 5 on the same day. So we were able to observe two classes, and we counted those as separate observations. So we had 25 observations, but those are not unique educators. I believe we had 18 unique educators. There was a small variation from what we planned due to schedules. 88 audio observations. 78 of the teachers recorded all four of the key lessons, and we coded 27 of those for this particular analysis. I'm trying to talk people into finishing up the coding, but that's not going very well. Our observation challenges. So we wanted teachers to commit to a schedule up front. These are public school teachers. It was like, okay, put your schedule down. We'll look at it. We'll look at everybody's schedule, and we'll have this great master transportation type of log and stuff. And that doesn't work. We're based in Northern California and Southern California, so we wanted to make sure we could cover different areas of the country, but in order for it to be cost effective, we'd have to, like in Boston, I think we had 8 educators. But we were only observing certain lessons, so we had to try to find a time where we could get the maximum number of observations in to make it worth going there. Teachers rescheduled due to weather. We had weather issues actually when we went there, and the block scheduling was a problem. So I have 5 minutes to go through. We looked at internal consistency of teacher logs and inter-rater reliability. We created fidelity scores for each lesson, and overall, it was a percentage. Basically, we decided to interpret fidelity as it's either there or it's not there. There's no partial. There's no almost having fidelity. It's either there or not there. So we gave them a 1 if it was there, a 0 if it wasn't there. We did some recoding from the comments that were in there. And then we calculated agreement also between the various measures on single activities. So what we found, when you look at the in-person observation compared to teachers, about half the time they agreed. And consistently the teacher fidelity score was above the in-person. When we looked at the teachers compared to the audio observations, about 60% of the time, so a little bit better, they agreed. What happens is that the audio observation really falls almost halfway between the in-person observation and the teacher. When we compared in-person to audio, we found that they agreed about 60% of the time. We also looked at different activity types. So we took the fidelity activities and we divided them up into worksheets, review, skills, role play, and so forth. And we found that there was a lot of variation at where we got and the amount of agreement based on method and based on activity type. We also looked at student involvement items, and we looked at teacher response items. So there were other items that weren't in our fidelity checklist that were related to fidelity. And we also found the same thing. There was agreement that just sort of went all over the place. Again, teachers always inflating. Audio tapes, what we did find was that some behaviors could be coded easily on the audio tapes, but not all. There was higher agreement between audio tapes and teacher logs when there was no in-person observation. So we had some overlap with observations. There was a higher agreement when there was no observer present in the room. Which 75 to 48%, so it's a pretty big difference. We need to sort out some inter-rater and method differences because we have a little bit of nesting of is some of the difference due to rater, is it due to method, so we still need to work out some of that. That's why I want more coding. One of our coders loved the audio coding. She was an in-person observer and she did the audio coding. She felt she got so much more insight to the teacher's class when she could really listen and really pay attention to it rather than being in the classroom. Why the differences? Interpretation. We've got different people who are interpreting some of what we're rating differently. Because this was our outcome, we couldn't really give the control group a lot of information about what they were supposed to rate because we felt that that was going to become an intervention in and of itself. I still think that with 16 logs, the logs become an intervention kind of in and of themselves because we're really, if you're asking your control group over and over again, did you do this, did you do this, after a while they're going to say, oh, I guess I should probably do that. So it was really difficult for us to not influence the outcomes. Then there were recall issues. There's time lag for the teachers that isn't there for the observers and isn't there for the coders. The audio recordings, you can go back and replay. And then also visual cues that are not there on the audio tapes. So our conclusions is that we did an online tracking system, online logs, and incentives, and that did increase the completion of logs, but we still had a time lag. In-person observation may be a more accurate measure of fidelity, but for projects like ours, it's really logistically difficult to do or impossible. Audio observations might be an alternative, but they can, if you can pick up the behavior you're looking at, and then the truth is probably in a combination. And one of our big questions is, does this matter? If we're looking at it for an outcome, in the end, would we reach the same conclusions? And I actually looked at some preliminary data. Our in-person observation data, our N is low, so it's we don't have a lot of power. But what I did find was that our overall conclusion was we did find an impact on fidelity. So we got a significant result based on the teacher logs. There was a significant result that there was an impact of the training on fidelity. So the the treatment group did have higher fidelity scores. In the observations, when I compare the group, the treatment group does have higher fidelity scores by about the same percentage point as they do on the logs. The thing is the logs, they're up in the 70s and 80s. 80% on the observations are down at like 40%, but the direction is the same. So there's still more work to be done. Thank you.